Hello, I'm Anne-Marie Rooks, co-creator of the Edge Effect podcast and founder of GTB Homesteads. The Edge Effect describes a phenomenon that appears in nature where two different ecosystems meet. This junction usually displays a more vast diversity of life than the two separate ecosystems. For our use, we refer to the junction of two cultures, the dominant Western culture that does not serve all of us, and a new culture that we must all build to provide justice, equity, compassion, ecological regeneration, and peace. In this episode, we'll be chatting with John Stolmeyer.
John Stolmeyer, tell people who you are.
Okay. I am John Stolmeyer. I'm a Trinidadian. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. I'm 68 years old. My profession, as in what I got my bachelor's degree in, is I'm an artist. I specifically refer to myself as a conceptual artist. When I was in university in the mid-70s, conceptual art was a thing, and that was the thing that inspired me. So yeah, that's how I refer to myself. But I've also, over the years, developed interest in sustainable culture. What, you know, what it takes to create sustainable human cultures. So all my art is related to that. I do performance, I do sculpture, I do natural jewelry. I'm a master craftsman. I work with calabash and coconut shell and wood and driftwood and stones and feathers and, you know, whatever I find in nature. And I also then refer to myself as a bi-regional animist. I was born into a family that really, we didn't have religion, you know, pushed at us in any way. My parents were free thinkers. They were intellectuals. They, you know, they read a lot and they sort of gave, you know, put out, you know, question everything. So I didn't have any solid religious grounding. And in my searches, I've been through the whole gamut of religious practices. I've, you know, been into palis and you know, pujas and all different kinds of practices. But as I say, I call myself a bi-regional animist. And I guess I will get to fill that in as we talk.
All right. Yeah. Well, one of the first questions is a matter of fact, it was a question that you had suggested when I first broached this idea to you. Because one of the thesis of the Edge Effect is to change this culture that is not serving us and change it to one that is based on justice and equity and compassion and regenerating the earth as well as peace. But if you could define culture.
Yes.
What is culture?
Okay, well, if you look at what the sociologists would say, is basically the values, norms, and beliefs of a group. And you can have groups of different sizes, obviously, and so it's how they relate to each other and how they relate to their environment. But when you look back at the etymology of the word culture, you know, where it actually comes from, and it comes out of the Latin. It's based in the Latin verb colere, which means to till, to farm, to cultivate, which is like to plow or to turn over the soil, and also to worship. It comes from an Indo-European root word, quail, which means to revolve, to turn around, to move around, to sojourn, to dwell. So we also get the word wheel in English from this same root. Mm-hmm. And it looks like if that is the case, that culture is connected to agriculture, mm-hmm. that it kind of assumes that until the gods showed up, there wasn't any culture. Until agriculture showed up, farming, tilling, cultivating, that, what came before that is not culture. That is really how the word, presents itself. Now, the thing about it is agriculture only showed up, as a way of acquiring our food, quite recently. It's only approximately 10,000 years ago. And we humans genetically have been around for 200,000 years at least. And, well before that time, 10,000 years ago, in the tropics, before we even left Africa, we were practicing different kinds of food encouraging systems, horticulture. They describe, the pre-agricultural cultures as horticulture.
Right.
They just use a digging stick. Yeah. The difference between horticulture and agriculture is the plow. The plow, where you have to, you have a tool. It's initially pulled by humans, but eventually pulled by animals. But that is really the beginning of agriculture, is the use of the plow, I think we can safely say. Mm-hmm. And what agriculture does is that it produces a food surplus.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quickly it produces a food surplus. And if there's more food, then there's going to be more humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an ecological law, which the first says all life on earth is food. And the second law, the size of a population is dependent on food availability. How much ever food there is, the population is going to rise to consume that food.
Or fall.
So,
Or fall if the amount decreases.
Right, exactly.
Aha.
Whenever there's a famine, of course,
right.
Yes. That's right. So you have that happening. And in fact, before agriculture, peoples did not really know famine. They knew seasons of plenty and seasons where there wasn't as much food available. But famine was not part of our condition, our human condition, before agriculture. Because with agriculture, you create a huge population. And then if there's 2 or 3 years of drought, then you have a die-off.
Mm-hmm.
You have real suffering.
Yes.
So anyway, from this, we can see that there are actually we can divide cultures into two main categories, those that are before agriculture and those that are after agriculture.
Right.
And so what happened with agriculture, with the large populations and then consuming all the food that they could grow in the area where they started off, then they needed more land to grow more food to feed the growing population. And with that, they started to conquer and enslave their neighbors. So that is the beginning of our culture, the dominant culture that presently is controlling the majority of human beings. Our culture has colonized the minds of the majority of human beings, that we are a conquering culture.
Okay.
We have to constantly grow in order to survive. So
agriculture really then is the watershed, the actual time of that change.
Yes.
The defining marker.
Yes.
For that change in culture.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we describe it as pre-conquest cultures.
Uh-huh.
And post-conquest cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very, very fortunate as a culture that many, many, as thousands of animist tribal cultures have survived into the 21st century, living the same way that their ancestors did 10,000 years ago when our culture started practicing agriculture.
Okay.
I want to make a little aside here. I spell agriculture A-G-G-R-E.
Yeah.
So it's short for aggressive culture.
Aggressive culture, yes, yes.
What, because
I want to go back to what you said about there being, still being people who might have been practicing pre-conquest,
yes,
still living that way in post-conquest times. You call them animists. Could you explain what that is?
Okay, so animist cultures believe that everything is sacred, that the world is a sacred place, and that we humans belong in such a place. And basically, it is the reality that we can have relationships with everything. You know, and if you have relationships of respect with all the other beings, all the other species, all the other forces of nature that surround you, that you communicate with them and you treat them with respect and you ask them what they need, you attempt to give them what they need, that you have a reciprocal relationship, you know, with a rock, with a river, with the breezes, with the sun and the moon, you know, that you establish that kind of communication with your environment, that is the way animists interact with the world.
So cultures like that, would you then say that it was inevitable that once populations exploded because of agriculture, that could never have continued in a space where there were animists operating in a particular way? Would you say that
right,
that was inevitable once the population exploded?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that what actually happened is one of the consequences of a growing population is urbanization.
Okay.
That people started to first live in villages, permanent settlements, towns, and then cities, and then nation. City states.
City states.
You know. So there'd be large cities with a wall that, you know, people would there would be people who living inside the city and there'd be people living outside the city. Mm-hmm. That is, it's the urbanization that separated people from nature, from, you know, they no longer were able to communicate with the forces of nature. And at this time, a priesthood was established to do that communication for them. So in terms of geological time, this is after the last ice age. The last ice age retreated about 11,000 years ago. And then within 1,000 years, you start seeing civilizations showing up. And so civilizations are hierarchical. There's a priest king, and then there's a priesthood that by paying attention to the movement of the planets against the backdrop of the stars, they're able to determine when to sow and when to reap. And so that knowledge of when to sow and when to reap for the agricultural societies was very important. It gave the priests, you know, that respect, mm-hmm, that they were able to make those kinds of predictions. So that is what the change that took place from being connected to nature to being less and less connected to nature. And then that those tribes that became urbanized and were constantly growing, they would then, and this is all happening in what we call the Middle East, the Levant. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, there were many city-states all warring against each other, you know, fighting back and forth. Sumeria, the Assyrians, you know, all these different peoples, language groups that were at war with each other. And then you have the Persian civilizations arising, and then the Egyptian civilization arising. So all these were, you know, at constant war with each other, shifting alliances, shifting power. But they're all waging war against the animist cultures, the tribal cultures that were around them, their neighbors, and also to the pastoralists. So there's another way of getting your food that was available to human beings early on is pastoralism, which is the following of herds of ungulates. So animals that naturally they eat grass and they move, you know, with the seasons, wherever the grass is, they move, that, you know, humans would attach themselves to these herds and they would be able to harvest meat whenever they needed it. Mm-hmm. And usually they would, you know, take a sick animal or a young animal, something that was easy to catch, and they would have a constant supply of food. So it was actually the pastoralists in the Arabian Peninsula that first came up against these Caucasian agriculturalists coming down from the north. And this is where we actually get the story of Adam and Eve. It's interesting that what we call the agricultural revolution is on the one hand considered the greatest thing since sliced bread, but is on the other hand, from the Christian point of view, it was our punishment. Farming was the punishment, right? And so how did that story come about? And the way it's told, Daniel Quinn is my source for this. He has a series called the Ishmael Trilogy.
Yes.
And he came up with the thought that what happened is that these Semitic pastoralists were following their herds in the Arabian Peninsula when these wheat-growing agriculturalists, you know, expanding from the north, started to conquer and enslave them in order to grow more wheat. And they had to come up with an explanation for how these people came to be the way they were. This is, you know, completely different from how humans had ever behaved before. And so one of the things that it appeared is that they had taken into their own hands the prerogative, you know, the rights of what normally the gods would have made the decision, who should live and who should die. So when you want to grow wheat and you meet a forest, you have to move the forest to grow the wheat. So it means that all the species in that forest have to die in order for you to be able to grow your wheat.
Yeah.
So they're making that decision, who should live and who should die. And the way it's worded in the Bible is they came upon the knowledge of good and evil. So it is good to live and it's evil to die. So when you have the knowledge of good and evil, it is like you're making those decisions which normally is the God's decision in every encounter between a prey and a predator. Sometimes the prey gets away. Sometimes the predator gets to eat. You know, it's in the hands of the gods who eats and who doesn't eat at every interaction, you know, between prey and predator. But here we had a culture coming out of the north that was deciding all these species have to die so that I can grow my favorite food, which is wheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I remember because I did read that book that you loaned me, and he explains it by saying that the pastoralists came up with this creation story,
right,
for these agriculturalists from the north. And the agriculturalists heard the story and use it as their own creation story, intriguingly.
Right. So it comes back around to that, which is what happened, that the Christians, being within the Roman Empire, that when they started sharing this this mythology, which is actually the Jewish creation myth. But the Christians had got it from the Jews, being that the Christians were initially Jewish.
That's right.
But that when they were when they became part of the Roman Empire, that creation myth then got spread into Europe. And in the meantime, the agriculturalists had spread into Europe preceding that. So before that, much earlier, the agriculturalists had spread into Europe. But here now is a story coming to them that they easily recognize, that this is who we are. We are the people who live by the sweat of our brow tilling the soil.
And so that is the genesis for what we're calling Western culture.
Yes.
This is this culture that began out of having this ability to grow vast amounts of wheat.
Yes.
And feeding people to the extent that you have all these population explosions.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
You have been listening to The Edge Effect, produced by JTB Homesteads and Global Villages Development Consultants. Editing services by John Francis of The Legion, and music by Terrenaissance.